Chapter 7 Alpha Star Platform, Lower Levels. Kurt had taken plenty of firefighting courses during his years in the Navy and NUMA. He knew the basics, advanced techniques, and everything in between. He'd helped blow out oil rig fires on land several times. All his training told him one thing. Fire was a living thing that needed to breathe. Take away the oxygen, and you cut off the fire's life. The problem with this fire seemed to be supernatural. Not only was it an unearthly mix of orange and blue, it burned in sealed compartments where there couldn't possibly be any free oxygen. It burned in and under the water. He couldn't swim beneath it, only around it. As he made his way from the sinking part of the rig to the surviving section, he was forced to circumnavigate one column of flames after another. Reaching the main section of the rig, he climbed out of the water and onto a stairway, moving through a tangled mess of burnt and twisted metal. So far, the platform's auto-leveling system was keeping it from tipping over, even if that required taking on so much ballast that the lower decks were now underwater and the remaining section of the platform was slowly settling. Making his way around the side, he reached the outer stairwell. Kurt found himself free of fire for the moment, but surrounded by smoke and toxic vapors. A monitor strapped to his arm was reading four different kinds of poisonous gas, along with a lethal level of smoke. If Kurt weren't suited up like an astronaut, he wouldn't have lasted 30 seconds. The heat was another problem. Though the heat-resistant suit and the coolant still running through it were keeping his body temperature from rising too much, it wouldn't last for much longer. He checked the oversized chronometer strapped to his other arm. It showed 11 minutes of oxygen and 5 minutes of coolant left. He would have to work quickly. Continuing upward, he climbed 3 flights, fought his way past a set of loose pipes and spotted his destination, an orange-colored pod, roughly 50 feet long, with a pointed nose and rounded tail. The escape boat resembled an oversized torpedo and was designed for its own type of launching. The vessel wasn't lowered into the sea like a ship's lifeboat. Instead, it sat on rails that were angled downward. Once the restraining clamps were released, it dropped nose first, sliding forward and then free-falling from the high decks of the oil rig. Kurt had endured a test ride in a similar escape boat. It hit the water at 50 miles an hour, and despite the pointed nose designed to break the surface tension, it felt like they were smashing into a brick wall. Because of that, the occupants sat backward, wearing harnesses and head restraints that kept them from suffering from whiplash. This wouldn't do them any good unless the boat could get free of its cage. Kurt saw the problem as soon as he got close. One of the launch rails that directed the pod as it slid forward had been bent inward by the explosion. It was now acting like a gate, preventing the boat from releasing. "That's not going to be an easy fix," Kurt said to himself. He wondered why the men hadn't come out to free themselves or look for a second boat. Picking up a length of pipe, Kurt climbed onto the rails and then banged on the hull to get the occupants' attention. With his gloved hand, he rubbed away the soot and oxidation that had covered the porthole. Putting his face up to the glass, he counted 10 people inside. They were strapped in and waiting. Even from his limited view, Kurt could see that several were injured and burned. Another man was at the controls, desperately working a radio that he'd used to call for help. Kurt banged on the hull again, and the man finally noticed him. He staggered over to the porthole. "You're caught up," Kurt shouted. The man pressed a button, and a voice came over a speaker. "We tried to shake the boat loose by rocking it back and forth, but no luck." "And you're not going to have any," Kurt said. "If you come with me, I can lead you to another boat. Or we can get to the water. I have a small submersible coming back to pick us up." The man shook his head. "I got injured men and women in here. 5 with burns, 2 with broken legs, 3 more unconscious. None of us has fire gear. It took us forever to climb down 2 decks just to get in the pod. We'll never make it." Kurt realized instantly that the man was right. It was either escape in the boat or die inside it. "Strap yourself back in," Kurt said. "I'll try to cut you free." "With what?" "Swiss Army knife, if that's what it takes." Kurt looked around for something to slice through the metal rail or bend it out of the way. Nothing obvious jumped out at him. But he had an idea. "Get ready for the drop. It's going to come suddenly." "Hurry," the man said. "We're cooking in here." Kurt had no intention of wasting time. He backtracked to the bundle of loose pipes that he'd climbed over earlier, found a long, thin one made of a lightweight alloy. It had threaded ends where additional pipes could be attached by screwing them together. He grabbed three matching pipes, compared the ends, and then went back to the stranded escape boat. His first thought was to use the pipes as a long lever, bending the misaligned launch rail back and freeing the boat, but that proved impossible. "Give me a lever and a firm place to stand," Kurt said to himself. "But if there's no firm place to stand..." Something detonated in the lower levels. The catwalk shook and debris tumbled toward him from above. Kurt ducked out of the way. The water was the key. He quickly screwed the pipes together, twisting them tight. With all three sections linked, he now held an unwieldy 40-foot tube of metal, which he lowered into the water below, deliberately submerging the pipe into a dense area of flame. Balancing the pipe against the catwalk, he removed his secondary regulator, split the hose, and directed a jet of oxygen across the open top of the pipe. This created a low-pressure area that drew the volatile gas into the pipe and gave the fire pure oxygen to breathe. It took a few seconds for the gas to rise up the pipe, but when it reached the top, a jet of fire burst out the end. Kurt held it up against the launch rail, stretching dangerously over the gap to direct the fire against the actual bend in the rail where the metal was already the weakest. The pipe warmed in his hands, with the heat soaking through his fireproof gloves. "Come on," he whispered. The jet of flame was continuous and intense. It quickly blackened the launch rail and then reddened it like the embers of a fire. With the rail glowing red, it softened quickly. The escape boat inched forward. "Just a little more," Kurt grunted, his hands beginning to burn. All at once, gravity took over. The boat slid forward, breaking off the weakened rail and knocking the makeshift torch out of Kurt's hand. Everything fell in tandem, the pipe clanging into various things and the orange pod hitting the sea like a small bomb. The impact forced so much water aside, it created a temporary void in the flames down below. No time like the present. With two steps, Kurt jumped over the edge. He dropped feet first, with both arms holding the helmet in place. He plunged 20 feet below the surface and then kicked upward with all the strength he had left. Kurt broke the surface and swam for the tail end of the escape boat, which was already motoring away. A desperate grab for a trailing rope failed, and Kurt was on his own. He began swimming, following the wake made by the orange boat. It kept the fire off him, but he was rapidly being left behind. Eventually, the boat pulled far enough ahead that a wall of fire closed between them. Kurt stopped swimming and began treading water. He turned from side to side, looking for a gap in the wall of flames. There wasn't one. He looked below the surface, but the fire extended downward as far as he could see. He couldn't swim through, couldn't swim under, and couldn't swim around. "Definitely need a plan B," he said to himself. Slowly, the ring of fire closed in on him, the safe space in the middle shrinking until Kurt was treading water in a circle no more than 15 feet across. Just as he was about to pick a direction and swim for it, something hit his feet, lifted him up, and left him sprawled out flat. Joe had surfaced the submersible directly beneath him. Kurt grabbed on and steadied himself. The hatch opened, and the smiling face of Joe Zavala popped out. "The weather's a lot nicer on the inside." Kurt was already moving toward the hatch. "You don't have to ask twice." He swung his feet over, dropped down inside and sealed the hatch tight while Joe vented the tanks and took the small craft downward. With an oxygen alarm beeping and a coolant warning flashing, Kurt pulled off his helmet for the first time in what seemed like hours. "Took your own sweet time getting here," he said to Joe.
"I was giving you a chance to get out of there on your own," Joe said. "Thought it might help build up your self-esteem."
"That's thoughtful of you," Kurt said, pretending to be appreciative. "Except that I almost ended up like a baked potato."
"More like pasta," Joe said.
"Actually, it was hard to find you, and hard to navigate through all this fire, even in a submarine. It was only when the escape boat hit the water that I got a clear bead on where you were."
Looking through the forward glass, Kurt could see the columns of fire clearly now. Joe navigated around them, but also had to avoid sections of the half-submerged rig, tangles of wreckage, and floating debris. This isn't oil or natural gas, he mused.
I don't think so either, Cho said. But then, what is it?
No idea, Kurt said. Something tells me we'd better find out.